Welcome to the Street Photography Magazine podcast, priceless inspiration and advice for street photographers everywhere. Hello, and welcome to episode number 33 of the Street Photography Magazine podcast. I'm your host, Bob Patterson, publisher of the magazine. This is the place for inspiration and advice by street photographers for street photographers. And I'm really glad you took the time to be with us today. I think you're going to enjoy our guest and get a lot out of what he has to say. But if you like our show, please take a few moments to stop by iTunes. You know, whether you subscribe through iTunes or Stitcher or the Google Play Store, however you do it, please go to iTunes and leave a 5-star review for us. That's the best way for others to find the show and give us a little pat on the back for all the hard work that we do. Now, every photographer I have ever met wants to be recognized for their work. I mean, after all, why do we do this? You know, we want to be recognized. We want people to see and enjoy what we do. And one of the biggest questions I get from people is, how do I get published? How do I publish a book? And our guest today is somebody who figured that out. His name is Niko Kalyaniotis. He's originally from Greece, but he's been living in the Scranton, Pennsylvania area for many years. And he has published his first book, which is a monograph, and it's all about Pennsylvania. He traveled throughout Pennsylvania and documented the lives of the people there and the places. And the name of the book is America in a Trance. Now, this is near and dear to my heart because I grew up in the hills of western Pennsylvania and eastern Ohio near the potteries and coal fields and the steel mills. And during my lifetime, I witnessed the decline of these core industries to the area. And it left behind many empty houses, unemployment, and unfortunately today, opioid addiction. But people stayed. People stay there because they love the area. They have roots there. And the people there, they're still hardworking. They're very proud. And they're extremely hospitable and friendly to really anybody, no matter who you are, whether you share their political beliefs, whether you share their passion for the Pittsburgh Steelers, or even for your skin color. I find it a very, very friendly and welcoming place. Now, the mountains and the rivers and the hiking trails throughout this rugged state are absolutely beautiful, and I encourage you to visit there one day if you haven't had an opportunity. But the towns that lie between these hills can often be viewed as sad and depressing by those passing through. And many of these towns are far from beautiful, but they offer some very interesting photographic opportunities to the photographer who is willing to spend some time there and get to know the local people. One such explorer is Niko Kalyaniotis. And although he has lived in eastern Pennsylvania for many years as an immigrant from Greece, he still feels like an outsider. And when I learned of his new book, I wondered, is this, and I'm going to put this in air quotes, this foreigner would understand and be able to capture the soul of this unusual and unique spot in America. And after seeing his photographs, I can say, yes, he has. And I encourage you to check this book out and see for yourself. It'll give you a good understanding of a part of the country that many people fly over or they drive through and don't stop and get to see. Of course, you can't do that right now. So in the meantime, please sit back, grab a beverage, and listen to my conversation with Niko Kalyaniotis. And with me today is a very special guest. It's Niko Kalyaniotis. He's an assistant adjunct professor at Drexel University in Philadelphia. And he's a former photojournalist. He's an author, and a matter of fact, he's coming out with his first book, his first monograph, which we're going to talk about today. So welcome, Niko. How are you?
I'm very good. Thanks for having me, Bob.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you on. Niko wrote an article for the magazine in the early days about his life in New York City, as basically growing up as a Greek immigrant in New York, which I thought was a fascinating article. And great photography. And so I'd like to start out just by asking you a little bit about how did you get into photography?
Well, that's the question that, you know, it's the standard question people ask when they talk to photographers. And the honest answer about that is that I don't necessarily have, and I didn't necessarily have a connection, a direct connection with photography. I don't come from an artistic background. My father is an economics professor. My mother used to be a graphic designer back in Greece for a short period of time. And I always wanted to be a musician, but apparently that didn't work out quite well. I still play the guitar now and then, but that's about it. But the answer that I always give is that photography for me became a tool to cope and assimilate, or at least try to assimilate, from the transition coming from Athens, Greece, to the United States, and with the first stop being Astoria, New York, which was the project Bittersweet Apple that I did a few years ago, which placed emphasis on my experience that I had with Astoria, that my first experience in the United States, which back then Astoria used to be a predominantly Greek community. But I was not obviously taking pictures back then. So it was mostly a tool to discover. It became a tool to discover, and it's still a machine that I like to use that word, that lets me understand, or at least try to understand my environs. I did not pick up a camera when I was 8. Nobody gave me a camera. I picked up a camera actually late in life, around 20 years old, when I started my community college photography degree in Luzerne County Community College in Nanticoke, Pennsylvania. So there's not really, I don't really have an interesting story when it comes to that. I was always fascinated by people and the environment. And studying the environment and studying the people. And it's something that till this day, it's a process that I follow. And although I upload constantly on Instagram and on social media, I don't necessarily take pictures daily. And there has been a lot of times that I would go on many journeys without even having a camera, just experiencing the place. And I think for me, that's a very important element in developing my work and the relationship I have with photography.
Just looking at your work, it looks like you do shoot every day.
That's what a lot of people tell me, but it's not true.
So anyway, so you wrote, or you created a book called America in a Trance, and it takes place in a place that's near and dear to my heart, and that's in Pennsylvania. I grew up right on the border of Pennsylvania, along the Ohio River. And, you know, I have a love-hate relationship with the state just from growing up next door. I mean, I always remember as a kid, Pennsylvania was the place with the bad roads.
And Billy's.
The bad roads and the factories that made our river turn green, things like that. But it's actually a very beautiful place. It's a very unique place. And you really, I think you did an excellent job capturing sort of the essence of Pennsylvania. If you know, anybody out there listening has never been to Pennsylvania, it's a huge state and, you know, very diverse, but in the middle of it is, well, it's hard to describe. So
it is hard to describe,
yeah,
actually.
And that's why you did, I think you did an excellent job with it. So how did you happen to pick this as a project, and how did you, you know, go through the process to actually turn it into a book?
Well, that's an interesting story because I, although I lived in Pennsylvania, most of my time in the United States, with some time spent in Ohio when I worked in a newspaper there in Coshocton and then upstate New York. And I was fortunate working for those newspapers to cover the community and travel through small town America. And that's when I started to experience the United States from a different perspective, you can say, than the one that I felt when I lived in New York City. And I think that started to shape my connection, you can say, with the place. And although I lived in Pennsylvania and I lived in Scranton and I was going around to doing assignments, I've never really thought of doing a project in the region, not even in Scranton. I was always doing assignments for the most part. And the personal project for me started when I went to graduate school, and it was part of I needed to create a thesis. I needed to create a personal project. So it was kind of funny because although the aesthetic that I'm working right now, you can say, has photojournalistic tendencies, photography, I don't like to put titles in it, but my first project was, personal project, was the Bittersweet Apple. And although I have done hundreds and hundreds of assignments of any kind, I actually struggled when I went out in Astoria and to document it, quote document it. But it was mostly, the project was mostly about me. I wanted to capture something that, of what I remember when I went to Astoria. And although it was predominantly Greek community back then, and now, I mean, it still is, but it's not what it used to be. There was a connection, but at the same time, a divide with a place. So that was the initiating project for me to go out and start documenting Pennsylvania. And mostly when my father moved here in 92, I was starting to again try to cope with the idea of being here, because the truth is, I never really wanted to be in the United States because I had my friends in Athens, I had my life there, the culture was different, the way you communicate with people was different. It was a completely different world. And what I say in my statements is that when you live in Europe, in any country, and you have not experienced the United States at first hand and experience the United States outside the metropolis, outside, Philadelphia or New York City and Los Angeles, and you're there stuck in Athens, the only access you have 25 years ago are Hollywood movies. it's true. And I say that my perception was that, oh my God, the United States is a wonderful place, in which it is, and all the lights and the glamour and the action that is going on and the heroes and whatnot. But when my dad moved to New York, you can kind of see that. You see the glamour, you see the metropolis, everybody's busy and whatever. But then you move to Scranton, Pennsylvania, and the environment completely changes. And that, to me, after many, many years of looking without photographing, photographing for assignments, of course, but looking and trying to make sense of, what you're experiencing or where is this country, you can say, was, and where is it going, it became a personal journey and exploration of trying to understand what America is and what America isn't, and not judging it from afar, whether this be 30 years ago or where this is this happening now. Because I think if we have a situation now in our country, is that I believe a lot of people that they were born in this country and they were raised here and they live in big cities, they're not necessarily familiar with a small town America. And I might sound nostalgic about it, or I don't know what the word is, but I feel there is a intergalactic divide between metro America and rural America.
Oh yeah, I agree completely.
The experience of living in a big city obviously is not the same that living in rural Pennsylvania, rural Ohio, rural, Idaho, etc. But it is very important, socially important, I think, and it became an education for me. As a foreigner, I consider myself still a foreigner, but I also at the same time, I consider myself an outsider with an insider's perspective, or vice versa. And the big difference is that people in Greece, for example, it's a small country. People that live in Athens and they have a very comfortable life, they still have a very strong connection with rural Greece. Mm-hmm. They will go to the villages. They will go. They're very aware, and they also understand the way of life, the thinking behind that, those social decisions these people make. They're familiar with the landscape, with the economic decline, with this and that. I don't think that this is necessarily true in the United States, and I think that's what is and was one of the reasons that, you know, considering the political climate, mm-hmm. what is going on here. And that for me became and a target. It became a desire to start exploring these areas throughout the state by leaving preconceived ideas behind. Mm. Everybody has preconceived ideas, okay? Everybody has agendas. Everybody has their beliefs. But I believe it's very important to leave those aside, especially when you are using photography as a form to communicate, and go there at first hand and try to understand what's going on.
Yeah, so how were you received when you were visiting these small towns in Pennsylvania?
It was a wonderful experience, and it still is a wonderful experience. And I'm actually a little bit, I don't know what the word is. There's a lot of talk about acceptance of immigrants and racism and this and that in this country, which obviously exists. We're not denying that, but, and it's not obviously a good thing. But I have an accent, as you can see. You know, I'm a Greek going to Braddock, Pennsylvania. But I never had any issues. I was always welcome. Although my photography approach is not very intimate, I don't really ask permission to photograph, because the human element is kind of, you know, mm-hmm. blended in the landscape. But I had many conversations with people that they are, you know, random in the corner, where I'm sitting in a corner for 45 minutes trying to waiting for things to happen. People would come up and talk to me, and it was a very interesting and rewarding conversations about about life there, about what it used to be. And one of the main themes, you can say, or something that I long to transfer to the viewer with my photographs, is to have them think about, you know, what was there, what is happening now, and what is about to happen, you know, 10, 20 years in this town. So I try to leave things a little bit open-ended in my work, if that answers your question.
Yeah, yeah, it does. And having people approach you on the street where you're hanging around on a corner with a camera, that's not going to happen in downtown Pittsburgh or Market Street of Philadelphia. You know, they're just going to go marching right by and not even pay much attention to you. But, I was in my hometown. I grew up in a little town of East Liverpool, Ohio, right on the Ohio River. It's, you know, the exact area where you were working. And I was there on business, and I had my camera with me, and I was just walking around about 5 p.m. Nobody was around. I walked by this barber shop, and the guy looks at me, and he waves me in. Has me come in, and we just sit there and have a conversation. He lets me take all kinds of photographs around the barber shop, and I grab one of my favorite photographs of my lifetime as I walked out and took a photo of him just standing in the window staring out. And that would have never happened.
It's what's very interesting to me about what you just described is that you capture a wonderful photograph, but the story behind that photograph is probably more interesting than the photograph. At least in my experience, is very true, because, you know, it's about being in that place and feeling the place, not only in terms of the formal qualities, but very in an emotional way, and try to understand it. And the things that the little entities that happen before you take the photograph or during the process of taking sometimes don't necessarily translate in the picture. And that is something that I strive to show in the work. I want to bring the viewer in experiencing the moment that I experienced, because if that doesn't happen, then I don't think the photograph works.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I see it in my own work a lot. I feel it's often distant and disconnected because I don't take the time to talk to people. I see it a lot. I mean, we look at photographs all day, and probably most of the ones I see, maybe not taken from a physical distance, but more of a mental distance, you know, a grab shot, a shoulder, a hip shot with no engagement with the people. And, you know, for many of us, it's difficult to actually engage with people, especially strangers on the street. And what I'm getting at, as I'm wondering, is has your experience as a photojournalist enabled you to get closer to people and to make more of a connection before you make the photograph?
It has, because of my training as a photojournalist, because I have dealt with a variety of situations and I had to gain people's trust in order to photograph regardless of the event. And sometimes it was, I had to keep my distance. Sometimes I had to get into the personal space and become more intimate. But in regards to the American trends, I kept my distance. I think, though, that regardless of the distance, you still have to blend in with a place, because there's people, you're very exposed in these towns as a photographer. Like you mentioned earlier, if you're downtown in Pittsburgh or New York City, Philadelphia, nobody really cares about you. You know, you're part of the group. But when you are out in Western Pennsylvania or Eastern Pennsylvania in these little small rural towns, you are the man with the camera, and people are very worried about you. And a simple smile and a hello and how are you doing and, you know, how was your day, how long you lived here, goes a long way in letting them you do your own thing. I think that's important, but it's very different and unique. And also I'm 6'2", I'm a big guy. So I'm going to these towns and I use not a point and shoot camera. I use like a Sony A7. I have my professional equipment, the big cameras, but I decided to leave all that behind. And I literally go out with one camera and one lens. I don't even take a backup camera, because the idea of this project was for me to go there as a regular guy and then throughout the journey to start making pictures of that will accumulate in images that will tell something, not necessarily about the place, literally, because I'm not doing some form of objective documentation. I'm not making any economic statements directly. So that I think also helped. And, you know, I'm going into these small towns and these little alleys and, you know, I drive a car that looks like an undercover cop car, which is interesting.
That doesn't help.
No, it doesn't. It's like a fourth user and then I have a beard and I'm going in there and I have, you know, it's an interesting comical times.
Yeah, they probably thought you were a narc.
But I never had, I don't know, it helped me in the, I think it has to do with your personality too. I think it has to do with, the person. But predominantly it has to do with the idea of why are you there? Because I started this project before the elections. I started this project in 2000. So it was pre-Trump, pre-Hillary era and all this, you know, spectacle that we're experiencing. And when the campaign started getting in and started getting into these towns, I started seeing some visuals that they were not, I don't know if it's not the right word, directly representative of what's really going on there. They were a little bit agenda oriented, and that's fine and that's understandable. But I try to leave all these things aside because the theme, as you know better than me, the theme in Ohio and in Pennsylvania the topography, the people, the way things look can become cliche in a split of a second. And that was something that I tried to avoid. I don't know if I succeeded or not, but at least that was my, you know, my intent.
Yeah, in my view, in the photos that that I've seen, you seem to have really captured the essence of this unique part of the country. And you live there, but you're not from there, so you have a bit of a detachment. And I know, had I walked down those streets and seen many of those scenes, I wouldn't have paid attention to them because I'm just so used to seeing seeing that. I mean, that's what I grew up with. Who wants to see that?
Right.
Old house on the side of a hill. But you made it very interesting. And I wondered, how important is it to have more of a detachment than somebody who actually lives there to make an accurate representation of the area?
I don't think you can make an accurate representation of the area. I think you can make an open-ended representation of the area without concentrating solely on the dilapidation or the economic decline, although it was necessary for the purposes of the project and of the book, as you know, we're going to talk later, to have those images there. So it was a blending of trying to be a little bit objective of showing the ruins or the contemporary ruins, but also I was looking more of elements that they had some flair. And I think the treatment of color and the light and the little details that are happening that sometimes are entertaining, and they show the character of the place and the mode of survival, because I think these places are very important in the American, you know, society. And I think they are neglected. And I didn't really care about the house and the whys, because that is different depending of where you're standing socially, culturally, politically. But I wanted to make it something that through the detachment of look, and by looking, you can come to any interpretation instead of kind of photographing the interesting person walking down the street. And what's interesting about the detachment, if you can call it, because I'm very connected with this area. I love this country. I love the state, and you know, all the states, but I tend to work for the most part where I reside. But when I go back to Greece, I'm having the same alienation problem.
I bet.
And I think that is, I'm working on the next project there. It's been going on for 2.5 years now. I'm going back again next month to continue that, you know, it's basically the reverse of America in a trance. And my goal actually is to make another book of that will be, you know, the other side almost of my visual journey and my journey as a human being. And I don't know if I'm answering this correctly. I think it has to do with the person's experiences and the person's intentions and what you want to achieve as a photographer. Because if I put everything aside, regardless of, you know, what I want the pictures to be, what I want the pictures to, how the pictures to be read, the main focal point is I want to make an interesting photograph aesthetically. It's about foremost about photography, about the picture. And then I want through that frame to have all these other references and wings to social issues, to culture, to the landscape and whatnot.
So what do you want your reader to get from this book?
I want the reader to get my story, because the treatment of the human element in these pictures is me. And if you look at other projects, especially, you know, my work from the newspapers that, you know, you're really close to people, there's a big distance between me on occasion, between me and the person. And I see myself, I saw myself, and I still see myself into those pictures. That is me trying to kind of, I'm wandering through these towns the same way I was wandering in these towns without a camera, because I did when I first moved to Pennsylvania. And the only thing in my mind was, what am I doing here? I want to go back to Athens. And when I go to Athens, I'm walking different streets and I'm thinking the same things as, you know, thinking of the United States. But I want them to, it's a conversation. I want the photographs to be a conversation in a way that, the same conversation that we have today. It's not a political statement. It's not going to change anything. I want the photographs to be aesthetically pleasing, but at the same time, start a dialogue about these areas, about these towns, regardless if they are in Pennsylvania, because the same setting in Ohio exists, in Illinois. I mean, there's in Michigan.
Yeah.
So I think it's universal, and I think it's very important, especially if you bring politics into it. It needs to be that dialogue needs to continue with a detachment, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So what was your biggest surprise after going through this entire process? Any big aha moments?
Not necessarily. Besides the surprise I had, I don't even know if it's a surprise, of the distinct moments that you can find if you becoming part of the environment that you photograph. I think, and I don't want to sound in some sort of way, and through the process of photographing and through the process of editing, and even now, because I still go out and take pictures because I have plans to continue and maybe expand down the road outside the state, how to not replace, maybe find images that they might possibly top the pictures that I have now. And it's interesting because while I was photographing, after a period of time, 80% was editing while I was photographing and considering what I already had. Mm-hmm. Like, I started pairing pictures into pages while I was out there in the field.
Really?
And it was interesting how things ended up being the way they are, if they are interesting. I'm just, it was interesting to me of this idea, because I'm still forcing myself, and I go back to these areas and I go, let's see if I'm going to go and find something better. And, I'm still trying. I think those pictures that in this project, I'm proud of, and I'm the guy that I'm not, you know, fond of my work, because I think by being very, very critical, you improve. I was never into loving my pictures and so never.
Yeah.
But for some reason it worked out. And it's also about, I think that's the interesting part, it has to do with your life experiences, because the reason, one of the reasons I started this project and I was going out there in full force, I was influenced by personal events, personal life events. And I think that's why I stress all the time that these pictures are about me and trying to find myself at the same time when I'm trying to find the place. So I think one of the surprises was that, hey, you know, if you're not emotionally well, you can get some pretty good pictures. I still believe that, by the way.
I mean, aren't they always about you, one way or another, probably, or at least the best ones?
Yes, Yeah, it should be about you. If your projects are not internal, the intent is not internal, the result, I think it will become, you can say maybe superficial. It will be all about, you know, showing what's out there. Nothing, of course, is wrong with that. I've done that for many years and I still do on assignments. But when working on a personal project, things tend to change a little bit. And also the visuals that you could see from usually from media organizations that they have, you know, they have an assignment and they go into a particular location to photograph, whether that be places in the Rust Belt, the images from somebody that in Ohio, that from somebody that lives in Ohio and has been photographing there for 20 years are completely different, and they should be different. But I think that's another interesting conversation that plays an important role into these areas. I don't know if I'm making sense on that, but
no, it makes complete sense. You know, when you're working on a book like this, and you were even saying that you were editing on the go. I mean, how do you know when you get to the point where you've got it? You've got enough material and you're ready to start putting it together? Or do you just eventually just give up and abandon it and say, okay, now's the time?
Well, there's different ways. I mean, people work in you know, they have their own process. After about a year and a half into it, I started placing the images both in my mind, but also, you know, in some sort of an informal sequence in the book. And like I mentioned earlier, it's very easy to become redundant because, you know, how many times you're going to have a person walking down the street, okay?
Yeah.
And how many times you're going to have
an
abandoned building and, you know, the light and the shadow and whatnot. So I let the pictures sit for a long time. Like, I don't look at my work when I photograph. I mean, it might be, you know, 2 months before I sit down and do an edit after I did a trip to Western Pennsylvania. But then I let them cook. And then it's almost like an obsessive reaction that I sit down, I will, you know, start placing things together. And even in when we were doing the editing with Joa Freelander from Float Magazine, which he was my designer, we were playing with the sequencing. There were decisions that they were made in a split of a second because you're dealing with a pair that you're putting on the book. And on two pages, and then you immediately think about the previous pages and what's, after. But I wanted this to be a journey, and I wanted it to be kind of like you delve into a town early in the morning, and you're going to these different, you know, experiences, formal and personal, and then at the end, you are going into... into the evening. And if you look at the book and that is the transition that you go into, like the early morning light. And then it starts with, like, you know, the shadow and the light, and it ends with the shadow and the light. But it's part of editing. I think the editing is, you know, 90% of the work.
Did you actually spend several days in each town, or did you pop in and out?
I would go, the way I worked was I would just look on the map places that I've never been to before. And my experience with Western Pennsylvania, this was the first time that I've been there through my trips. I've done, I think, 5 trips to Western Pennsylvania. And I would just pick a town and I would just go have a base and stay in a hotel. And then I would just go up and down and, you know, pick towns from the map. And I would just go visit them. It was almost like I was traveling with no destination. I didn't do any research. Mm-hmm. I didn't ask people for direct information. I would just ask, hey, you know, what would be interesting for me to go visit on occasion. But I would just go out and drive. And I still do that. I get in my car and I just go out and drive because I wanted to experience the state that I live in. And, you know, you always have this American industry and what America is in your hand, in your mind. And then when the political states came in, then things became really interesting because there was like thousands of images circulating mm-hmm. about Pennsylvania, about all these towns. I mean, this is me in 2015, and I'm just going out in Pennsylvania making pictures. And, you know, there's many photographers that have done projects in these areas. But then when the elections came in, it's like it was like all over the place. And I was like, OK, what am I doing now? You know, what's going on? So
surprise. How'd you find a publisher? I mean, that's got to be very difficult.
I'll be very honest with you. I do things in a very direct way. I just send an email. No, I mean, it's honest, true. I send an email to Damiani. I send, you know, a sample of works in a, you know, in a PDF, and they were interested in, and then things moved along. And then 6 months, 7 months later, there's the book. And there was a lot of things that changed from that initial dummy, you can say, of, you know, PDF with images. Because the deadlines, I thought I was going to publish a book. We're going to go into printing in the fall, and everything was pushed back. And that was like when panic kicked in, because I needed to make some other trips. And believe it or not, I got some of my best pictures when I went on my last trip two months before I started to putting the book together, the finishing touches, when I went to Erie and all those areas. So it's that you can say that that's when my photojournalism skills kicked in, because I was, you know, I was way more determined. I was always determined, but I'm like, okay, I'm working on a deadline right now. This is going to be, you know, it's going to become a book with a very important publisher, and I need to get things, you know, perfect in terms of the pictures, so, yeah. And everything else.
Yeah, it's amazing how that works when you're under time pressure.
Yeah, and I think people, and I think, you know, I have always sent, you know, simple emails. I believe in that, and, you know, I want people to receive the work because they're interested in the work, and I don't want any other mediators in between. Okay. I mean, you know, I think that's, but a lot of photographers are hesitant about this, and, you know, from people that I know, from students and other, that they have bodies of work, and, you know, they're like, oh, how can I find a publisher? How can I find this and that? I was like, just send an email. That's what I do.
You don't ask, you don't get, as they say.
Right. Well, I mean, actually, yeah, that's exactly right.
So, well, maybe you already answered my next question, and that's, what advice would you give somebody who wants to create a book? I've never written a book, so I can't give a definitive answer, but you can.
I think the best answer I could give is that you shouldn't be thinking about a book. You shouldn't be thinking about a book. You shouldn't be thinking about MoMA. You shouldn't be thinking about galleries. You shouldn't be thinking about publications. And you shouldn't be thinking about an interesting subject matter. When I started taking pictures, until even now, I completely disregard all of that. It will be great, but I think having a project that is meaningful to you, that speaks about your life or the life of others, but you have to be part of that project that you're working on. Everything else, I believe, at least it has worked for me, comes to you organically without being forced. You cannot say, I'm going to go out and make a project because I want to make a book. I don't believe in that. I mean, it's a great idea, but I think you need to have the work. And if you don't get a publisher for whatever reason, that doesn't mean that the work is not good. I advise people all the time, and through the universities, but also through other avenues. And the first question that they ask is, how can I get world exposure? And I'm being very honest. It's the question of all times. How do I get world exposure? And the answer is that you need to edit your project. step number one. Okay. And you need to work on the pictures, and then everything will come along. You still have to make, in my opinion, and I don't know if that works in my book or in my project, you need to have those strong images that the photograph will become an entry point. The person, the viewer will enter, and then they can start moving around instead of just having the text doing all the work. I don't believe in that. So I think that with hard work and determination and having great friends and colleagues that they understand you is imperative. I was fortunate from my design, Yoav, to other colleagues that I've talked to, that they have played a very, very important part in this project. They are part of this project in discussing, in giving feedback, in me showing them the book, showing them pictures. I think it's a whole process that involves a lot of people. And sometimes it involves the people that they are detached from the photographer and the publisher are more important. And also, that's something that maybe kind of links to what you asked me before about advice. I tend to read about projects and processes and writings about works that have nothing to do with. Like, I'm like on the opposite spectrum in regards to photography, in regards to how I see photography, what photography means to me. But I'm very, very, very interested about the process. Mm-hmm. Of how that person, whether it be a conceptual project or a documentary or a portrait, et cetera, mm-hmm. photography, and how that person speaks about the work and what the work means to them. And the intent becomes very, very important there. But I think there's a lot of theory that is coming in, and theory is good, but you know, it's the villains, huh? Well, you put me on the spot here. I think the one something that's is stuck with me from what somebody told me many years ago was I was doing something completely different, and you know, wanted to be a documentary, and I was doing portraits, black and white, of people, whatever I was going, and somebody told me that I was in a portfolio review, and they said, oh, that's, we have seen this before, or, mm-hmm. you know, that you don't move photography forward, or, you know, you have all these sayings about after photojournalism, after photography, after street photography, and after this and that. And I don't know what all this means. Okay. After photojournalism, after street photography, what does it mean? I mean, I think everybody is a unique individual, and they're using the medium in the way that it fits their life, or simply they're just going out and enjoying it. Just because I said, you know, working in a project or something meaningful is important, I don't denounce the idea of people going out and photographing for fun. But when you have, you know, a particular, when you have like, you know, a circle or whoever that is, doesn't really matter, from your friends to curators, that they kind of directing a particular aesthetic, you can say, then I think you're taking the fun out of people's photography, you know, in one way or another. I don't know. It's a little complicated and disheartening at times, but you know, people tend to follow trends, and I don't follow trends. I think there's a place for every kind of photography, any style, any aesthetic, and that's the beauty of it. And I think people should go after that. But at the same time, there is also, you know, and you know this, young photographers, they tend to go into the, quote, exotic places that is visually very interesting to photograph. Mm-hmm. And nothing's wrong with that. But that it's not going to make you the next big thing. Maybe it will. Okay. You know, I was very fortunate when I worked on my Bittersweet Apple project during my graduate school to work with Alex Webb. he was the one that edited the project, and with Rebecca Norris Webb. And they're both wonderful people. And the depth of those two people in regards to like editing is amazing. When they're with, you know, 300 4x6 proofs, and in the first hour we were down to like, you know, 60. But considering that aesthetic, and I'm just giving you an example of Alex Webb, I mean, there's others, you cannot do an Alex Webb. Okay.
Yeah.
That, you know, but people that start out, they're kind of concentrating on that. They're looking at that because he has been very successful. But Alex Webb is Alex Webb. And, you know, Costamanos is Costamanos. And William Klein is William Klein. And I think that was also a challenge in my work. And it's still a challenge with my work. Walker Evans, you can go, I mean, Jesus, I mean, this area has been photographed by so many great photographers. But I don't know. I just think, I don't know if I'm going completely off topic here, but
no such thing.
No such thing. I agree. I'm glad we agree on that. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, what's your opinion about that? About the villains of photography? That was metaphorical, but I think, you know, it's to put it simply. There's a lot of great photography. A lot of great photography that is not being shown.
Yes.
And I'm not talking about my work or your work or anybody's work. In general, there's a lot of photography that is not good photography that is not being shown. And then you're going to have the counter question, what is good photography? And well, if that's the case, conversation is finished in my book. If you start, you know, I mean, come on. I mean, okay. If that's the case, then we're going to accept everything that, you know, everybody does, when we should all be at MoMA. You know? I'm very straightforward in the way I express things about photography, because I don't have a fine art background, and I mean, I did went to school and I got all the muscle fine arts, etc. But this is exactly the same way I speak with I lecture to students, and they appreciate that, and I get really good work out of it. And I think you need to have that kind of style, you can say, of expressing, instead of being really theoretical and be completely out there, and the only person that understands what you're talking about is probably you, and that's not necessarily true.
That doesn't mean you're a good communicator if you're the only one who knows what you're talking about.
If you go to back to Robert Frank and Walker Evans and all these other people that did major projects, and you read the statements about the Americans to get the Guggenheim, you get it. You understand what the person is talking about. You do not need a PhD. But, you know, you have projects now that you read and, you know, it's like, I don't know, I'm probably Greek and I don't understand it, and that's fine. You
know? I know. I see that a lot. We get some short statements with some work and I say, what are they talking about?
Yeah, and, you know, this we live in a society that we're constantly trying different things and different approaches, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I think that coming back to this area, to Pennsylvania, and then how that this area is represented photographically is very interesting to me. And especially from people that they have lived here all their lives. I'm just a visitor, okay, in a way, than from people that they have not lived in this area, but they come here and photograph. It's very, very interesting. Both great imagery, but the dialogue within the pictures changes, and that's beautiful. But at the same time, that dialogue needs to create another conversation.
Yeah. Speaking of conversations, you have a good portion of your website is, well, what we'd call blog posts, you call them conversations. And I encourage everybody just to take some time, maybe on a rainy day, grab your iPad or something and just, you know, just sit down and read through Nico's website and some of the conversations. He has some excellent interviews, and you really get the best out of the people you're interviewing. And I recommend you read all of those.
The conversations that are included, the interviews that are included into Under Conversations, is part of another website that I have, which is called From America with Love. And there are not that many on there, but on occasion I try to do one a month. And I pick photographers that they produce work in the United States, and that site is called From America with Love. And there's a lot of interesting projects there that I need to update it. I'm still waiting for some people to respond with answers, but those conversations are also part from America with Love, and I can send you the link to post it too, because those are part of. It's something that, you know, I do it out of love, and there's, you know, I just, whoever wants to contribute it, I always leave it open to people to send me ideas. Even if somebody has an essay for your listeners, or wants to discuss a project, or me review the work, or just have an essay about photography, about American photography, about what's going on and their thoughts, they're welcome to send it over to me, and I'll put it out there.
Oh, yeah, that's great. That's great. Yeah, we'll definitely have a link. Link to it in there. I read one of the articles by Mike. I don't know how you pronounce his last name. Froyo. Sorry. Just like the yogurt. Yeah. the mainland. I love trains. I used to travel by train to Pennsylvania all the time, and he did this project called Mainline.
Mike has a beautiful, extensive body of work.
Yeah. Yes. Beautiful work. Beautiful work.
Yes.
All right. Well, Nico, before we go, tell people where they can find your book, and where they can find you.
Well, they can find me on my website and at the link that you're going to provide, and they can purchase the book there. I'm taking pre-orders right now. The book is going to start shipping next week, so I'm in the process of getting prepared to package the orders that I have already received. And on Instagram, I'm under NJKPhoto. I can send you that link too.
Okay.
And on Facebook under Nico J. Cagliagnotis.
Great.
And if they're in Pennsylvania near Scranton, they can email me. We can grab a coffee.
Wow. Even better. I wish I was a little closer. I'd come over.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Unless you're going to be in Philly next weekend.
Next weekend? No. I'm going to be at this Thursday, and then I'm preparing to go to Greece the first week of June to continue my Motherland project, which is my next big project.
Ah, so, okay.
Yeah.
Great. All right, Nico. Well, thank you. It was a lot of fun talking to you today.
Thank you so much for having me, Bob. Appreciate it.
Once again, this podcast is brought to you by Street Photography Magazine. It is the number one source for inspiration, education, and publication for street photographers everywhere. It's made by street photographers for street photographers. Street Photography Magazine is published once a month, plus a few bonus issues throughout the year. Each issue includes an interview with our featured photographer to discuss how they work and take a deep dive into some of their photos. It also includes photo projects and photo stories from photographers around the world to inspire you. And it's a place for you to publish your work to be recognized. For example, the Street Shooters of the Month section of the magazine. It features photos from members of our community, and many of our featured photographers have been selected from that group. So stop trying to go it alone and join the community. All of this for less than the price of a cup of coffee per month. Stop over and subscribe now at streetphotographymagazine.com/subscribe.